And welcome to the press conference for Sleeping Beauty. For those who have not seen the film, and I'm thinking in particular of the television audiences since this is broadcast live, to quote the production notes, Sleeping Beauty is a haunting, erotic fairy tale about Lucy, a young university student drawn into a hidden world of beauty and desire. As Lucy, Miss Emily Browning. As the lady who hires her and perhaps mentors her in some respect, Miss Rachel Blake. And the director, Miss Julie Lee. And I guess I'm going to throw the first question to you, Miss Lee, and it's a twofold question. One, you are a well-known and well-established writer. Your work's been translated into several languages. And what made you think that this story could not be told in a book, but be told only in film? And once you'd made the jump, or at least solved that riddle, how did you go about obliterating the writer to give as much breathing room to the director as possible?
You know, the truth is there was never really a riddle in that it came to me in a completely cinematic form, so I never had to make a choice. The move from writing to literature seems actually quite natural for me because it's all coming from the same place, which is my sensibility. And our sensibilities are informed by our entire lives and everything we've read, seen, listened to. And so it is coming from the same place, and the novelist and the filmmaker work with similar things in that they're working with complex characters. First of all, I should say they need to have something that I want to explore. That's probably the most important thing, and the singularity of that question perhaps, you know, shapes the whole work. So complex characters, detailed worlds. Also, with a novel and with a feature film, you're really working with the flow of time. And I think writing novels, you know, I learnt to be very aware of how to work with the flow of time. And so how, you know, you want the reader to be turning the page in a way. And I hoped that with this film, we wouldn't really know what to expect about what comes next. And I also hoped to hold the line, like hold the tension. And I think, you know, writing novels, sustaining a long narrative, in a way, was transferable to making a feature film.
Except, no offence, when you write a sentence and you go from one sentence to the other, they sort of flow into each other. Mm. The way films are made, it's shot per shot, as an almost own entity. Yes, they do flow ultimately together, but that's the third stage of the writing, which is the editing, in part.
Mm. Well, okay, maybe. I mean, we have an unusual shooting style here, I guess, because we have these covering the scenes in one long take. From the outset, I had no intention of traditional coverage, which alarmed a lot of people, but when I proposed it to my DP, who he'd never done anything like before, you know, he was challenged by this idea, and everybody who came on board, we knew from the beginning this is what we would be doing, and they were all interested in participating in that. And I mentioned that one long scene in a way because while we did an enormous amount of work in the edit, a lot more than you probably would think, we didn't have to build the scenes within, we didn't have to create the scenes in the edit. Do you know what I mean? We didn't have to work on the pace in the edit. We didn't have to shape it so much in the edit as we would if we were doing traditional coverage and we had to really build it bit by bit. But we did employ a few tricks, actually, that are secret hidden stitches that I will never reveal.
Question over here, and then over there, and then here.
Good afternoon. Bruce Kirkland from the Toronto Sun. Question for Emily Browning. Extraordinary performance.
Thank you.
But it's obviously pretty raw and primal material that you have to explore, and I'm curious what happens to an actress presented with this kind of role where you have to go so out there, so to speak, not just physically, but that's true, mm-hmm. but also emotionally. So I'm curious what went through your mind to say, yes.
I mean, I sort of said yes immediately after I read the script. I was really affected and felt sort of uncomfortable when I read the script in the best possible way. Like, I love the idea of challenging myself in that sense. I was kind of... I live in Melbourne in Australia, and we filmed in Sydney, and I don't really have many friends there, and so I was kind of... I became a little bit isolated while I was making the film, which I think was important for the character. And, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I sort of became a bit of a hermit. I guess that's kind of how it affected my personal life. I would go and swim in the ocean by myself every morning and come home and make myself dinner and go to bed, and that was sort of my life while I was making this film. I think it was definitely, you know, I didn't become as disturbed during those scenes in the sleeping chamber as you might imagine, because I kind of taught myself to meditate through those scenes. I wasn't present in those scenes at all, so they really didn't have as much of an effect on me as I thought they might have.
Did you have any qualms initially?
Not
what was
really.
The pitch? Oh, by the way, you're going to be sleeping nude throughout the movie?
Well, the pitch was the script. I mean, in my everyday life, I'm a little bit nervous and not particularly brave, and so I feel like if I can be completely brave in my work, then I'm doing something right, you know? If that's the one area in which I can just give myself over to it. And I just love the material, and I could tell from the beginning that Julia wasn't going to do anything gratuitous. It was all, you know, tasteful. And also I just don't have a problem with naked human bodies. I just don't really think... It just didn't really seem much of an issue to me.
Sir, go ahead. And then you.
Mateo Sancho from Spain. I would like to ask Julia Lee about the concept of paradox in the movie, or contradiction. And to the actress, Emily Browning, the concept of innocence. Thank you very much.
Could you just give me a little bit more guidance about paradox? What were you thinking of youth and age, or were you thinking of conscious, unconscious?
I think you're combining in the same character many mm-hmm. contradictions.
The character Lucy is... I think of her as sort of quietly and willfully reckless, and if she is submissive, it's actually a radical form of submission or agreeing to do these things. And I tend to think that her perverse provocation to the world is, if the world is going to function on a kind of way of using or exploiting people in all sorts of ways, then, you know, maybe her perverse provocation is my cheek is turned, try me. And so she really puts herself out there and tests herself in all sorts of ways. And yeah.
Yeah, I think that in terms of innocence, the contradiction maybe comes just because I physically look, I suppose, kind of innocent, but I wouldn't consider Lucy. I mean, I think she's very aware. I don't see her as a victim in any way. I mean, there is something kind of perverse about her willingness to just let the forces around her sort of control her life and what she's doing. I mean, the way that she, at the beginning of the film, she chooses what man to go home with by flipping a coin. I think she's very aware of what she's doing, and I see her in a way almost as sort of a nihilist. She's just letting things happen to her, and I think you can sense that from the beginning, that she's kind of willingly putting herself in danger.
She's disrupting normal conventions of the life of a young woman on the up and up. You know, she's not really buying into that.
Mm-hmm. The lady here, the gentleman here, the lady here, and the gentleman there.
Thank you. A question for Julia Lee. You mentioned that you wanted to explore something. Can you develop what did you want to explore with this film?
Well, I do find that, even though it's a very understandable and good question, I do think it's very dangerous for the filmmaker to encapsulate in four or five sentences what they're seeking to explore. So I hope that the work is a complex whole, and I just have to feel that I have to tread a fine line between explaining meaning, you know? I think it does a disservice to the audience. Yeah.
Sorry.
Hi, Brian Johnson, McLean's Magazine. A question for Julia. There's been an awful lot been sort of said, written, discussed about the male gaze in cinema. And here we have a film that is very much about the gaze and voyeurism on a certain level. And it puts the audience in a very strange position in terms of how we are meant to watch the beauty, the innocence, and all the rest of it, how complicit we are with, especially if you're a guy and you're wondering, you know, there's really no place to go, kind of, in terms of identification here, except with the female character. So how do you expect audiences to react? Do you want audiences to be uncomfortable? Do you want the effect to be narcotic? Do you want it to be disturbing? What did you expect from an audience from this film?
Just going back to your comment about the gaze and the term voyeurism, I was thinking about that because, you know, I mean, what is the difference between a voyeur and, let's say, a tender witness? And maybe I think that the audience is more in a position of a tender witness rather than a voyeur, which to me has sort of shady undertones. But at the same time, I mean, the first scene of the film establishes that I hope people have a visceral reaction to that scene, which is the scene where she's swallowing the balloon. And so I guess I am trying to get under people's skin in a way. I mean, I like films that that don't go in one ear and out the other. I like films that that stay with me. And, you know, I don't want to talk too much about the ending, but I hope it's an ending that is like, just, I don't know how you write that, but, yeah, it's sort of a, it's a, I don't know, what's the word? It is meant to have, I hope it has a strong impact on the audience one way or another. And I also hope that the tone or the atmosphere of the film allows the audience to use their imagination and to get involved with the film and not to have it shoved in their face every 5 minutes, you know, a plot point or something like this. And I want the audience to really be watching with a sense of wonder, a little bit about, what is going to happen next, you know? What is going to happen next?
Just one question and then it's your turn. The question is about, in a way, sound design, if not more specifically, voice design. There's minimalistic amount of music.
Yes, yeah.
And at some point I wasn't falling asleep. I just shut my eyes and thought I was listening to a radio play between those two voices. And I don't quite know...
Was that the interview scene, maybe? Or I'm not sure.
I don't quite... The two of them combined together made me think of a score, in a way.
Ah, lovely.
And I just didn't know whether that was just a feeling that I had or whether you two ladies had to work specifically on your voices and the way you would carry the character through your voice.
I think they came with their voices, actually, to this.
Did you? I mean, I think for me, I definitely tried to keep it maybe a little more controlled than my own way of speaking, a little more flowing and sort of not too much up and down. I suppose that's a really bad way to explain it. But yeah, I mean, I guess I was sort of aware of it in that way.
Mm. Rachel has a very seductive voice.
Oh, thanks. Oh. I actually think there's a lot of musicality in Julia's writing, and that, you know, with that sort of brevity, you know, like Pinter, and there's an inherent musicality that comes out. So, I mean, it wasn't something that I had to think about, and it certainly wasn't something that we discussed. I just think when you play something for the essence of it, there's little subtleties that tend to come out that can be revealed. You know, if you do too much, you lose little things like that, little touches, and
Something else we work with in sound is breath. And we worked with very subtly, you know, with the breath in the chamber, and you know, we do little tricky things like it starts and then it drops out and then it comes back, even though there is a fair, I think, with my wonderful sound designer Sam Petty, we took a very, because of the visual style was quite restrained, we tried to marry the sound world. So it was more restrained. It's a strange effect that people think it is sort of mono. They think it's sort of like a radio play, because actually there is quite a lot in there. But it is very, very restrained. But yes, I was sort of more of the take it out than put it in school.
Ma'am, and then the gentleman.
Nirma Abdelghani, Abu Dhabi TV. And my question is to Julia and to Emily. Julia, were there any particular inspirations or true life facts behind the very intense character of Emily? And Emily, your experience working with a great filmmaker, Julia, and how did you research your character? Thank you.
In terms of inspiration, it's always very hard to pinpoint any specific inspiration. So... what I can say is, of course, we have the fairy tale that leaves a deep impression on us, whether we sort of know it or not. It's a story that we carry fairy tales with us. We have the ancient practice of older men seeking the comfort of younger women during the night. For example, King Solomon in the Bible sought to spend the night alongside sleeping young virgins. I think I actually read that Gandhi tested his chastity by sleeping beside young virgins. And you have, you know, a sort of shady internet world of sleeping girls. Two very well-known novellas, which from the point of view of older men who pay to spend the night with young girls, and it's their story, their point of view. So these were sort of, you know, these are just elements in the air. And then a sort of a different sort of perhaps odder, more personal connection was after my first novel was published, I was sort of exposed in a way. I contracted this terrible nightmare where I would have a nightmare that I was being filmed in my sleep. And it was a very effective nightmare because the dreamer is dreaming that they're asleep in their own bed, when in fact they are asleep in their own bed. So the lines become very blurred. And so this sort of idea that something could be happening to you while you're asleep but you don't really know what it is, which is something that sort of accumulates in Lucy's life in the film, you know, it has this odd connection with a dream that I had. But, you know, inspiration is always a tough one to answer.
In terms of developing the character, for me, Julia and I had two weeks, a week and a half to just really pull apart the script and talk about every detail. Julia gave me some films to watch. I remember the first thing you told me to watch was Antichrist, and just, I mean, I don't know, it was really just to see, I mean, Charlotte Gainsbourg's performance in that film, just that kind of bravery. It was really inspiring to me to see that somebody could just be that open and that brave and give so much of themselves to a role. And there were a lot of other films that I watched as well, so that had a lot to do with it. We worked a lot on just my physicality. I have the tendency to slouch and sort of hide. and I also sort of gesticulate a lot, use my hands a lot. And so we worked a lot on just my posture and walking and just finding the sort of stability, I suppose, of that character. And then also just in terms of the sleeping, you know, learning to sort of meditate through those scenes and not be present.
Okay, now sit straight, girl.
Yeah, I know, seriously.
Question over there, and then the gentleman behind you.
Hello, Ben Hoyle from The Times. I just wondered if you could tell us a bit more about the Birdman and about Lucy's relationship with the Birdman, how that fits into the structure of the film and what that's the purpose of that relationship is. Thanks.
Well, Lucy's in her early 20s. And I think that's a time when you form really intense, profound friendships. When you've left your family, you've left school and institution, you're going into the world, you're all trying to sort of break free, if you like, and form yourself. And anyway, in my life, those friendships that I made in my early 20s were very intense. And I have a huge amount of respect for that passage of life because I think it's probably a lot harder than we give it credence. I don't think it's addressed fairly enough. I think often we diminish, perhaps, for want of a better word, youth. And we say, oh, they're just young, they'll get over it, or this kind of thing. So I have an enormous amount of respect for people of that age and also what they're facing, what they're having to do. And I do think that that was my experience, was to form very, very intense friendships. And so... It is not so unusual to me that Lucy has a friend in the world. So this is a portrait of her character, and so she has this friend, and they are two people who they're sort of refusing to be well-adjusted in their own ways. You know, we have the turn of phrase in English, to be well-adjusted, and... you know, I've always wondered why we have to adjust ourselves. So these two are sort of resisting that. And I guess I wanted to show a tender side of Lucy, a more gentle side, like she takes care of her friend. And I think that's quite beautiful. And I think there's a line, I think he says, I just want to love my friends. I guess that's a feeling that I share.
Sir.
Je vais parler en français.
Si vous voulez, will you need translation? I think you all have translation.
Mm-hmm. I'm here.
I'll listen. Do you understand French?
I'll listen in French.
Okay.
Oui, je voulais vous poser deux questions. Croyez-vous au rapport d'amour entre hommes et femmes? Et vous pensez que votre point de vue est féministe? Et d'un autre point de vue, est-ce que vous avez lu les romans de Gabriel García Márquez
oui.
et de Kawabata
yes.
sur le bel s'endormi? C'est ça ma yeah. question.
So the question was, like, do I think it's a feminist film and have I read the Kawabata and the Gabriel García Márquez novellas?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I mentioned earlier that part of the inspirations were these two well-known novellas from the point of view of the older man. So the answer to the second question is yes. And, you know, I guess I come from a literary tradition, by the way, where you can allude freely to other works. And, yeah. And the other question...
About Kawabata and García Márquez?
Pardon?
No, his question was also very specifically about García Márquez and Kawabata.
Yeah. But what was the question? Had I read them? Was that the question?
No. Je pense que vous pensiez que les thèmes étaient similaires, c'est ça?
Oui, mais non, elle a répondu, mais les rapports homme-femme dans les films, il y a, est-ce que vous croyez qu'il y a la possibilité de l'amour entre un homme et une femme? Ou parce que votre personnage, il souffre beaucoup dans sa solitude. Et donc, je me demandais si vous croyez vraiment à la possibilité.
Do I believe it's possible to have love between
yes,
them? Well, my husband's in the audience, so I would like to say yes.
Okay.
Yes.
If you care to clarify one thing, and then we'll bring the press conference to an end. The production notes indicate Jane Campion presents, and unless I missed it, she's only thanked at the end of the film. What's the difference, and what was her part or your relationship with Jane Campion?
Jane's in the audience.
And
Jane? Bravo, Jane. And well, I was introduced to Jane Campion by the principal investor, which is Screen Australia. We have an excellent government funding program of films. Bulk of the money of this film was from two different government agencies. And since I was a first-time filmmaker, they thought it was wise that I would have someone that I could ask questions of. So I met with Jane and she read the script, and we would meet in pre-production. We always knew she would be away during the shoot, and then we reconnected in post-production. And, you know, there were so many, many times that I called Jane for questions about very practical things or, you know, technical things and, you know, is this normal or not? Jane was extremely generous, encouraging, suggested, you know, skillful diplomatic ways, perhaps, of negotiating the filmmaking process or the production, and also gave comfort in the edit, you know, having seen an early cut, that we were on the right track, and that was very important to me. And in terms of this, I think the simple reason for why this thanks is at the end of the film and the presents, I think it was a late idea of the producers to do this. It was not planned from the outset, you know.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for being here. All the best for tonight and for the rest of your careers.
Thank you.